easier one.
Yes.
And the difficult one.
Yes.
Oh, okay. You can proceed.
Yes. It's my job to choose the easy one. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Let me preface by saying, Chair, if you'll allow me, that I do not recall during my oversight that USASA had a Christmas party. So it might have happened in the past, it might still happen at some stage, but we do not have record of USASA having a party in the last year. So we haven't had a party, so if I'll be allowed to let that one go. Insofar as the board remuneration that has been indicated on pages 82, 81, particularly on page 82, allow me to make a general statement that says the discrepancies that you see in the remuneration of board members is indicative also of how board members are working within the board. I would hasten to say it would be also wrong for us to pay people who are not. So there are those who do come to board meetings, board workshops. We ask them to do a little bit of reading for us and interpret whatever needs to be interpreted for us. And quite obviously, then they would need to be remunerated as such. It's a very generic answer that I would be giving without going into the specific rents and cents. There was a question in terms of payment of monies to staff who had left. An indication needs to be given very quickly that some of the monies that are indicated in the report of people who have left, it's just that they could have left at a time, then those monies have to reflect that they have been paid. There would have been certain settlements that have been done. For instance, a case in point would be the settlement figure for the then CEO, Mr. Mulele, whose package was negotiated with and agreed upon, not by us, but some other people. It has to be reflected in the books. We do not know the terms of the agreement. We do not know how it was calculated, but it had to be done. You would also see then, Chair, you'll see, Chair, into the new the financial year we're in. The next financial statements are going to indicate, for example, for people like Tandeka, who was the executive performance management, the CFO, all the people who left. Obviously, the monies that they have been paid over the months when they were still on suspension and the cases were on, inevitably they would have to appear in the next financial year. So it's a question that may also still arise when we look at the next financial year. It has to be shown that those people have been paid. Let me also mention quickly the fact that documentation for criminal and civil charges are with the police and the Hawks. I don't know how far they are on those, and we're waiting every day for the knock to say, please come to court, we have finished. So we're just waiting. But all documents, they came and collected files, they asked questions, they did whatever they want to do. All they cautioned us on was to say, wait for us until we have our ducks in rows. Then we will start implementing the criminal charges. Thank you. The next question that was raised by Honourable Member Killian was the fact that she needed clarity in terms of there are people who are being paid whilst other people, there are people who are in positions whilst other positions are still pending criminal cases and whatever. Most of the people who are on criminal charges or in inverted commas currently, those books are closed. They are not on our books anymore. We have finished that. Hence, it was very comfortable for us to appoint the CFO, to appoint a performance manager, and so on and so on. So these are new chapters in the books. We do not have people who are still being paid when we have appointed. I think it would be very folly of us to do that. We do have, for instance, it does indicate there that we have got an acting executive manager, BDS, who's Mr. Lamani here. He's acting because the current or the newly appointed executive manager, BDS, is on suspension. So he's acting now in that position. So it's another process that is living its own life. May I quickly go to the Tinder story? Which is linked to the Gobodo forensic report.
I'm talking about Mr. Mtimde.
Mtimde.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. No, in fact, it's Mtimde communication. I don't know who's Mr. Mr. Ndlovu, yeah. Through you, Chair, and the honorable members, this is a ministerial assignment. He instituted the forensic report. And I don't think we're in a position to make any remark insofar as that is concerned. It's there with him. That's the least response I can give at the moment. May I hasten to take with humility the comments that have been made by the Honorable Member Shineman, where he said he's cautioning us against, I'm looking for the English word, but the Zulu word says ukululaza, to take lightly the remarks that come from the Auditor General. It's lulazi, thank you. I don't think that was the intention, but we're taking in good spirit what has been said. And the finance, our finance executive will speak to the mitigation over and above what has been said here. We are taking very seriously what has been said, particularly reference being made to a remark that he did. I wrote it in capital letters, financial controls need to be taken seriously. So it was not the intention to take lightly the remarks made by the AG. We're taking them seriously on board. I think I would pause for now, Chair, and give Makhotso an opportunity next to me here first, and then the CEO will follow, and the CFO. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start. I think there was a question by Honourable Shin. The question was around, do we have plans on how we're going to close the access gaps? Yes. That is the entire premise of the National Strategy on Universal Service and Access. What we were trying to do here was just to give you a quick synopsis of what is coming out. We'd be more than, if I may be forward, happy to give you a more detailed, take you through the detail of what is coming out and what it's starting to say. But yes, we do have a proposed way in which we're suggesting we'll close the gaps. There was, in respect of the public, the question on the public broadband, we were as shocked as yourselves. We thought we would see a better picture, but what is coming through is not as good as we would have expected, and it's looking at all three tiers of government in that respect. So there's a significant amount of work that needs to be done. If we're talking 2030, we're saying all institutions will be running on ICTs and be fully enabled and efficient, then it's cause for concern. But part of the proposals on how to close the gaps include on how we would close those particular gaps within government institutions and make sure that we're ready. We have some sort of state of readiness. In respect of the question on public consultation, in accordance with our initial plans was supposed to happen at the end of September into the October month. We were specifically requested by the department to pause in that respect, because the ICT review process will also be doing public consultation. So there was concern about causing confusion. That's why we have now tricked into the policy review process, and we sit on the panel as well and on the project management teams, so that we keep an eye on issues relating to universal service and access. But we've also handed over the research that we have done. So we've effectively contributed significantly to the policy review process. According to the draft schedule, which is yet to be confirmed, that consultation is scheduled for the month of February. So it will also involve issues relating to universal service and access. The consultations that we are preparing on now are one-on-one consultations with entity, with bodies such as yourselves, National Treasury, the NDP, the Planning Commission, SALGA, COPTA, and other key stakeholders that really need to know what they would need to, what part they would need to play in the value chain. Honourable Killian had a question relating to the figures within the APP and the report. The original annual performance plan at the beginning of April last year was saying 200 centres. That is correct. With the institution of the new board in September, October last year, together with the confirmation of the rollover funds from National Treasury, that was amended. It was amended to 120. The 140 is where we're sitting right now at the conclusion of that year's project. I hope that makes it clearer. I know it does cause, and we do apologize, but it was a necessary process to be undertaken. In respect of the report on connectivity of sites, that's readily available. We're more than happy to send that through, and it'll give you a clear indication of GPS coordinates, where you can find the actual sites, the type of connectivity that is in that area, the facilities or the equipment that is in those centres. So that is available if that detail is required. You had a question, Honourable Killian, around what was outstanding before that constitutes that explains the number from when we were there. When we were here in, I think it was the 27th of March last year, or this year, yes. What we were reporting is what had been signed off at that point in time. In the same manner that when we're reporting the 104, we had a report of 123 that the service provider was providing. However, we could not report that because we had not conducted the sign-off. So what we have reflected in the report is what we could confirm as at end of March 31st as being complete. We don't work off, we use the service provider report as an indication of the progress on the report. However, when we report on what we have confirmed on the ground. You also had a question around the CENTEC letter. Yes, CENTEC did send us a letter to indicate that they were short falling behind in respect of the handover project. That is why it is reflected as a project that rolled over into this financial year and has seen completion in this financial year. So when we report the 80 that is reflected there, it is 80 that is reflected, that has been concluded at the end of the financial year. There are some that came through in that will finalize in this financial year as well. There was also the question of what is the criteria when we select areas. The primary criteria when we select areas is whether there are areas that are declared as underserved or underserviced, and ICASA has made that declaration. ICASA was working off work that was done by USASA, and we made those recommendations to them. Emalahleni falls in that space, as does Msinga and Zanin. So that was the basis. Those three sites that I've mentioned are sites that...
The problem, they don't, You are talking about the Malahleni in Mpumalanga. Not the one somewhere else. So once you clarify that, they won't have a problem.
Okay.
The only problem they thought was in Mpumalanga.
This is Emalahleni in the Eastern Cape. It's actually, it continues even with our updated gap analysis. It's one of the sites that continue to reflect as grossly underserved. Honorable Stain had a question in respect of more information being in the presentation as opposed to the report and why. There's always a challenge in the way that Treasury wants us to report. They dictate how the report should appear and what information must be expressed in the report. And this always creates a discrepancy, especially when you're running a technical organization where there's far more detail. So the attempt here was really to provide as much detail and explanation as possible that you wouldn't find coming through in the actual annual report. This is why, if you notice on some of the comments that the AG made, they made comments in respect of the reporting formats not being aligned to Treasury regulations. It's precisely because those formats do not allow us the latitude to provide the information, as much information as possible, that we would ordinarily have. However, we've resolved that. We're now reporting, we're doing duplicate reporting. We will give them compliant reports according to what Treasury wants. But we also have our detailed reports, because the detailed reports are what help us track the progress of the project and intervene where projects are necessary. The challenge with the National Treasury formats is that they require reactive. They're reactive in their nature. They want the end. They want you to report on the end, and it's dangerous to do that because you wouldn't have been able to intervene if there was a problem in the interim. So we've managed it by simply just reporting duly. You had a question around the broadband output. The broadband output came in. We requested the amendment on the annual performance plan. One of the reasons was because we had received a rollover from National Treasury, and part of our rollover request was in respect of the broadband site that was in the previous financial year. When we were about to implement use of that, it was subsequently we were instructed by the department not to. So that's the one that we've referred to in the presentation as well. The funds are still sitting with us. So there's a degree of accountability that we need to undertake, just so it doesn't look like the funds have just gone into a black hole. You had a question around the map that we put up with respect to the postal services outlets against the population gaps. That is based, we were able to pull that map based on census data that we've got and the South African Post Office data that we've got. It is true you will never know the full extent of what you need. However, we do need to put together a logistics plan and have a sense of how many boxes need to go where. And that also has an impact on a whole variety of expenses, such as your transport, et cetera, et cetera. We will never know the conclusion of that until, obviously, people bid, as you say. But we do need to make adequate plans for that. You mentioned there wasn't adequate information in the annual report with respect to the centers, if I understood you correctly. again, it's a case of the format. Treasury is highly descriptive about what information they want and how they want it presented. We were just trying to give you a view, additional information, and we can also send that information through to you, to yourself, so you have a sense of what is happening on the ground as well. How will USASA have created that enabling environment for ICTs? It is indeed a bold statement. We can't shy away from it. You know, the other day I was looking at the National Development Plan in detail, and virtually on every page there's a reference to connectivity or internet connectivity all the way through, other than the section that deals with the telecom sector. So it's something that we cannot get away with. That is why we have instituted this National Strategy on Universal Service and Access. If you, when we come back and we take you through it, you will actually start to realize, given the deficit that is in the country, it is more likely to form the larger majority of a national ICT strategy because of the extent of the deficit. So we have no choice but to make that statement. Now, how will we achieve it when currently we have no money? We're not putting it together against the money that we've been appropriated. We are doing this, we are undertaking this exercise so that the country, yourselves, the country, the government can understand the magnitude of the work that needs to be done and the degree of investment that needs to be made if we are going to realize the new growth plan or we're going to realize in any significant way the imperatives of the National Development Plan. Can the strategy documents be emailed to yourselves? They are available, but I'll defer to my bosses to advise on that. But we're also more than happy. You guys are one of the key people, stakeholders. Oh, I'm sorry. You ladies and gentlemen, my apologies. My apologies. I apologize. You ladies and gentlemen are one of our most critical stakeholders, so we would want to come and take you through and give you a sense of what it is we're discovering and what it is that needs to happen. There was also a little bit of confusion around the AT revived centers. If I may, by way of explanation, last year we undertook new centers, and that was the project called the Rapid Deployment Project, which was a combination of access centers, community access centers, with the majority being within schools. The AT revised centers fall under the project called the Handover Project, and this is the project that looks at previous year's deployments and the reviving thereof. We've got centers that are as old as the organization, some of which had become non-functional because the equipment was completely out of date. So it was necessary for us to go back and just review those. And that's where I was mentioning earlier that you see more of a preservation of jobs, whereas with the Rapid Deployment Project, you see a creation of new jobs being coming through. Honorable Murutwa had a question or raised an issue with respect to the non-compliance with legislation. Why there was no compliance. I think I referred to this earlier. It's a discrepancy in the formatting of the reports, and we've dealt with that. We have our reports that are Treasury aligned, and we have our operational reports that are a bit more detailed than what Treasury stipulates. So what we did was to give the AG the reports as we tracked our project reports, and the issue was that it was not aligned to the way Treasury would like them. So we've resolved that one. She also had a question in respect of how far USASA has gone to meet its mandate, specifically on the rapid deployment of access centers. I think I've explained the differences between the two. This project, as it was funded in the previous financial year, has come to a close. We've opened a new one that would deal with the target of the 30 centers that are relevant to this financial year. So in respect of the outputs for last year, we didn't meet them in totality. We completed them again in this financial year. However, we're done with that. We're now starting a new, opening a new project, still under the rapid deployment, but to deal with the 30 sites that need to be rolled out in this financial year. And then Honorable Schneeman was referring to page 28 on the PowerPoint. The question was, is there no way these gaps can be closed faster? I think there's always ways and means that the gaps can be closed faster. The question is are the finances readily available? We've done it. We've mapped it out on the five-year MTF basis. However, it really is a question of how far does Treasury meet us with respect to the funds required to roll it out. I don't think there's a deficit in the number of people willing to come to the party. We've actually, out of interest, initially we engaged, when we started out this project, we engaged with the sector itself. And the excitement was quite amazing. So they're also, in addition to yourself, one of the key stakeholders that we're going to be going back to report to them on what we found, the gaps, the approximate costs that we require, and to start to engage in a conversation of how do we meet each other halfway and how can we roll out much faster than just 2020.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Chair, I would like to speak a little about the statement that is appearing in our business case that purports to talk about the work that USASA is doing or is supposed to be doing. That statement, basically, you'd want to look at as part of our vision. It's a statement that seeks to say, let's go out and establish the access gaps that are out there. Let's go out and establish the underserviced areas that are out there. And let us do everything in our power to make sure that we try and close those gaps that are existing out there so that each and every South African in every corner of the world, of the country, is able to get connectivity and move away from the current situation that we find ourselves in. You would recall, Chair, that there's a statement made earlier on that USASA, since its inception, has not been able to do things that they were meant to do in terms of it meeting its mandate. Hence the board's intervention by creating and working on the national strategy. This national strategy, you can call it a general strategy if you like, but it is a strategy that went and reflected on the gaps that are existing. It's a strategy that reflected and it went down to town, to district, to municipalities, to provinces, and it breaks down areas and township that needs interventions. And it also goes and breaks down the type of intervention that we require. But the nice thing that is coming out of this particular national strategy is...
Mpumalanga. Did you go to Mpumalanga?
Yes.
Oh, that's good. You can proceed.
It goes, Chair, to say... Part of the biggest problem that we have is that on the communication side, we do not have the infrastructure that is required for us to be able to connect people in the most rural of areas in the country. And it therefore says this is how we think we could achieve that over a period of 5 years. Funds permitting, we can do it in 3 years. But it also reflects on the current manner in which USASA is characterized. After USAF has a strategy, are we properly structured as USASA for us to be able to implement that particular strategy? And that information is coming out of out of this national strategy that we are all quite excited about. Now, the nice thing, Chair, we are proud to say it is the first time that such a document has been presented. It's been put in place. It will be the first time that such a document will be presented to the National Treasury. And in our discussion, preliminary discussions with National Treasury, that's the type of sentiment that they're giving out. There was a question that was asked, Chair, about the late payment of the pay-as-you-earn and what has been done about that. It was not only the pay-as-you-earn, it was also their compensation fees to the Compensation Commission. Chair, there are people at USASA, one of them is currently at suspension now. The first case he has set in terms of the disciplinary process, and as soon as the process has been completed, then feedback will be given. But there are steps that have been taken to correct those measures, because certainly we could not leave people that did these kind of things unattended. In terms of the verification, there's a question that also came in terms of the functionality of the site. What we define as a functional site is a site that has got computers. It's a site that has got computers that are connected. It's a site that has got computers that has got applications, learning applications, training applications, all types of applications that we have determined over the years through research. And it is a site that is connected. That means you are able to connect on internet on those particular sites. How do we do the verification? The verification is done through the initial project management documents that are filled in. But we then take it further to say the person or the school principal has to sign off to say, these are the number of computers that I have received from USASA, these are the number of chairs that I have received from USASA, there is one server, there is one satellite dish outside, and there is connectivity. And he must have tested that connectivity is taking place. When that has then happened, we would then do what we call an independent verification, where we will call the school and we will verify that information from the school and from the principal himself. So that's the type of verification that we do. We have done that in the last week, myself and the CFO, and we've also gone out to visit some of the sites that were picked up as sites that were not necessarily there when initially. We went to those sites and we found that those sites are there, and the CFO will then attest to that. Chair, there's another question that has been raised around the CAPEX, the 2.4 CAPEX that is too little. The statement that says the CAPEX is too little, it basically refers to what we want to use that CAPEX for. We want to roll out ERP, and this ERP we want to roll it so that it facilitates the implementation of DTT. 1.2 million or 2.4 million is too little for us to implement ERP. The quotation that we have from SAP is 15 million rands. We don't have that 15 million rands capability. So the 2.4 is little in respect of what we want to do. Without implementing this ERP solution, there's a number of things that will continue to happen that revolves around the financial controls that the member spoke about earlier on. But lastly, we are pushing to implement this particular ERP so that we are able to integrate with post office, because post office is on SAP, so that we are able to integrate with SAPC, because SAPC is on SAP, so that we are able to integrate again with Centec, because Centec is on SAP. We would not allow a situation where we implement a project of this magnitude with all these funds allocated to it on running on paper. It's just not feasible for us to be able to do. Now, the amount that is remaining on the 2.5 is 1.3, and I'm assuring you it will be used. The DOC is coming to the party. They are assisting us with the funds to complement the 1.3 that we have so that we implement this particular project, but that money will be used. As I speak to you, procurement processes are already underway to secure a contract direct with SAP so that they can start with the implementation of this particular process. The initial process flows has already been concluded. There's a question that also asked in relation to what is appearing on the HR side of the report. The budgeted headcount for USASA is 67. Where there was a time when we had 51 people employed, the rest being vacancies. That particular problem has been addressed in that critical vacancies are in the process of being populated. Now, I'm mentioning critical because critical is an operative word. We don't fill vacancies for the sake of filling vacancies. We want to fill vacancies that are critical, that we cannot do without. Those that we can do without, we will then make sure that we get people to do more with less. Chair, around the issue of the 1.3 million of the legal fees happened when the organization was going through a process of disciplinaries at some point when legal people had to be employed to finalize this particular process. At this particular point in time, this amount is contained very less. We do have internally a person that is assisting us with the legal opinions as and when needed, and that is doing the contract for us. We have gone out and employed a person also that's going to come out and make sure that that which we used to pay to external lawyers would be done inside the organization. There was also a question that was asked around the strategy and the research work that we have done. The national strategy work emanates from the research that we have done. We also had to consult with other agencies of the state, like your census, that gave us information, our NDP, and we also went out to go and research this information. Information is there. We have also taken this information and fed this information into the ICT review policy. And the ICT review policy is using this information to form a basis of what also they need to do in terms of us going forward. Chair, I've already touched on the issue around DTT. The work that USASA was supposed to do on the DTT, for the fact that we are the managers of the fund, the money that is sitting in our fund is about 690 million. That is the money that is going to fund EDTT when it gets rolled out. Now, from our side, we needed to create processes. We needed to create workflows. We needed to create capacity to make sure that when the contract is awarded, we are able, on the logistics side from our side, to be able to respond. And part of that has already been submitted. All that we are busy with as we speak now is the rollout of the ERP solution. The MOU with the post office is about 99% complete. It is just waiting some few minor changes, and then after that it will then be signed off. Chair, that brings me to all the questions that have been asked. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'll briefly touch on issues pertaining to the finance. The first issue which I'll talk about is the qualification and a brief explanation on what happened. What we had a challenge of identification of the equipment which had been fitted as at year end, as at a particular date. Note that the equipment had not been fitted, but it was just an issue of cutoff. That has been addressed through the verification which the CEO was talking about. And we went further and we met this as standard procedure to ensure that each time we fit equipment in a particular center or in a cyber lab, we close off that process with this verification, and that verification will filter through to the recording and to the reporting information. What we have also done is to ensure that we don't have this problem again, we have created a link between our operating unit, which is our business development services, and our reporting unit, which is our financial services, to ensure that as and when we have procedures or we have activities pertaining to implementation, they pass through seamlessly into our records. At the moment, unfortunately, this is still a manual process, and once we have the ERP system, which we have been talking about, then that process will become seamless and automated. And I'll also briefly touch on the issues with regards to compliance and some of the issues raised by the AG. As stated earlier on by the chair, we take the AG issues very seriously, and to show the magnitude we of importance we place on the AG issues. Every 2 weeks we have a meeting which is chaired by the CEO, which is attended by the internal audit, to look at each and every issue which was raised by the AG and to review the process which is taking place and to also see the progress which we have done. And these meetings ensure that there is continuity and there is progress and that we don't look at the AG issues only at year end. We also had problems emanating from non-compliances. These were due to lack of policies, and I'm glad to state that we have had about 40 policies and procedures manuals approved by the board after year end to ensure that all the gaps which were resulting in the non-compliances are covered. We also have a non-compliance register which is circulated on a frequent basis to the EXCO members and to ensure that these non-compliances do not recur. The other challenge which we had was the constitution of the committees for bids over the threshold. We now have a permanent BAC structure which looks critically at all the bids which come through, and this structure ensures that every compliance issue is taken care of before the contract is signed. And there has been a clear message from the board and the CEO that there should be a clean and unqualified audit. And I'm pleased to announce that this has been taken seriously, especially by the Financial Services Department, to ensure that we go green in the sense that we're going for a green dashboard to ensure that all the issues which were raised are sorted. Thank you.
All responded to. Members, I also make a follow-up. Okay. Honorable so much Niman, Shin, Killen, in that order.
Chairperson, obviously, you know I can't make a follow-up, but I can make a follow-up on the questions based on the responses. I've read the document. Thank you for affording me the opportunity, Chairperson. And I know the list process sometimes it makes people, you know, but doesn't matter. Chair, let me then, which I'm sure my colleagues have raised this one, to appreciate the effort that you saw in terms of a turnaround strategy, noting that or being mindful that while we're doing that, there are other things that you fall short in terms of performance, which sometimes cost money. I'm not defending you, I'm just making an honest, sincere statement. Having said that, Chair, probably the performance, it's manager or director, she's a manager? Executive, yeah, the big word. Executive, through your good self, Chair. If you can explain, I thought that the board members, in terms of their remuneration, is being kept, and also ours, it's the chairperson that raised that issue, is being kept so that they don't work more than like a full employment, so that also their remuneration is not above what is permissible. So then it seems like the way you have responded to that one, USASA finds itself wanting on that area. Notwithstanding that other members, they've raised also some of the committees not sitting and so forth. But also, Chair, let me raise this one. I should have started with that one. I'm not too sure who's representing DOC here. But why I'm raising that, because there are other things that should have been detected by DOC and people from DOC who are responsible for specific entities, as it may. I'm not saying that there are kids, they need to be monitored, but it does give a sense of comfort if the mother is taking care of his or her kids. The mother, it could be both. Chairperson, There is this issue, that one, the issue of Tusong centers. When we were getting, was it last year, the presentation from GCIS, they spoke about, and I raised it with you, Sasa, when you're dealing with, we were making a presentation, that they are thinking or exploring the processes that they will follow to close down the Tusong centers because they are not viable in its totality. Then my question will be, in terms of USASA's existence now, in light of that, in your strategy, have you looked at that, and how do you then mitigate that one so that it doesn't hinder your key performance objectives, as it may, or your mandate? Secondly, Chair, the report speaks about the facelift, if I may use that one, or rehabilitation of other centers, quite a number, more than 100. But when I received this map document, this one, I looked at it with eagerness, thinking that probably there will be somewhere it points out in terms of provinces where exactly those sites that have been, you have made a facelift, if you have, i.e. from KZN, and there's one at Indwetwe, which I raised it even last year, which I thought now it will be, but specifically throughout the country. Is it not because also, in terms of your human deployment in provinces, almost in all provinces have got one person, that then raised the issue, how do you then, do you do a helicopter oversight and accountability, calling people in the boardroom so that they give you nice to hear reports, and then on the ground is something else? How do you think that then you are going then to achieve the universal access, as it may, if you've got that human resource deployment in that fashion? Okay, let me just check here my notes. The other one, Chair, the project executive, she spoke about in her report, Chair, sponsoring some of the underperformance to other entities like your Centec and all that. The question, I thought also you were going to expand on that one. I'm very mindful that your report is based on AG's, requirements, but we're not AG, so we'd like to know the details. And your details should be on their laptop there. From where I'm sitting, but I apologize that you are not me, so it's different in terms of your response, is that don't you have MOUs or service level agreements that also ties down? That's where then the DOC also fits in for me. I would like to hear that, because if they agree that both parties, this is what we're going to achieve, and how do we assist each other that we achieve that that goal? So that it's lesser to be sponsored to other entities. I'm not saying that I don't believe you, but I'm just saying there must be a framework that you operate within. The other one, Chair, is the very last one, in terms of supply chain. I'm worried when you say that we are giving a report that says that the bid committee, we've got a permanent bid committee. Because supply chain committees, for me, in the light of dealing with the risk audit issues, let me say that. If we've got permanent structures, then what happens then in terms of ensuring that there's no collusion within the administration? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Schneeman.
No, thanks, Chairperson. It's really just a comment that was made earlier, relating to the information that is contained in the annual report. And the matter that was raised is that the annual report conforms strictly to the requirements of National Treasury. Now, I understand that and I accept that there are certain requirements of National Treasury that must be adhered to. However, this is an annual report. And anybody who picks up an annual report should be able to get an understanding of the work of the department in the previous year. That's why we have the annual report. And I want to just use as an example page 19 of your annual report. If you go to page 19 of the annual report, it talks about the number of centres that have been upgraded with connectivity, etc. Now, I don't think Treasury or the Auditor General would penalize a department if they put in additional information. And I really want to request that going forward, that you should not just be sticking strictly to the rigid requirements, but you should actually provide information in your annual report so that when we read the issue on page 19 about the sub-program dealing with connectivity upgrades, so when it tells us that 98 centres were actually upgraded, there should be information that tells you where those centres are, which are those centres, so that you have everything in your annual report. That's just a suggestion I want to make. Going forward, it will help yourselves, it will help us, it will help anybody who opens this document. So there's a requirement that you have to adhere to, but nothing stops you from putting additional information that helps to make the annual report more readable and understandable. And I really want to urge that you would do that and not stick strictly to these tables that you're required to put in. Because I think it'll be helpful. Because you must remember, your annual report is on the internet. And any member of the public can go and read your annual report. And they may well be interested as to which 98 centres, because they may want to see if it's in their area. They'll never know that, because the information is not there. So that's just really a comment I wanted to make, Chairperson. The second issue is to welcome the fact that it was raised that there's a meeting that takes place every 2 weeks. I think it's to review progress on the Auditor General's findings. And I would hope that those meetings will also assist going forward to ensure that we don't have the same things coming up in the next financial year. So one welcomes the fact that there's this great emphasis, but the same emphasis should be applied to ensuring that the current systems are in place and that we don't allow the Auditor General space to find fault again. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Sin.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was dissatisfied with the Chairperson's response to my question for details on criminal charges and disciplinary actions against this previous staff, some of whom may actually also still be employed. You know, I can understand her desire to want to put the lid on Pandora's box of the past, but some of this should have been dealt with during the past year, and I would really like us to have, please, a list within a certain time frame, perhaps 2 weeks or so, of all the people who are being investigated criminally by the police, at which police station, and what are the charges, and, you know, when do they think, you know, if charges have been laid, can we have that detail? You know, because, you know, I think that there were four main culprits in this. I think two of them resigned. I'm not quite sure what's happened to the others, and one got a golden handshake. And I think he was paid off simply to avoid a long legal process. And we actually need to get to a stage where people who are employed by the state get to understand that they cannot just walk away from these kind of wrongdoings simply because, you know, they become nuisance value and we'd rather pay them to get rid of them. There actually must be consequences. And also, because most of this stuff happened also, or actions should have been concluded while USASA was being managed by executive caretakers who are deputy directors general of the department. So, you know, that these things are still left hanging as far as we're concerned, because we see no conclusion. You know, for example, on page 84, travel expenditure not appropriately authorised, disciplinary action is being considered. Now, that was for misdemeanor, if you want to call it that. That happened in 2012. That was reported in the 2012 annual report. So that means it probably happened in 2011. You know, is being considered? Has a decision been made? What's happening there? So please, can we have, there's two or three pages of these misdemeanors, let's put it charitably. Can we please have a list
of how many staff are facing disciplinary actions for what, how many staff, ex-staff, are being investigated for criminal offences, and what those criminal offences are, and what the status of play is. Thank you.
Baie dankie, mevrou Kilian.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, Chair, I would like to just support the request. In fact, I wanted to ask the same, if we could just have a detailed list. Chairperson, and then I would just like to say, because we deal with a lot of departments and agencies, etc., it often happens that the Auditor General scrutinizes and then things are sort of taken up to a specific point and there's no follow-through. In fact, when I posed the question about 2 years ago about the Public Finance Management Act, it was revealed that not a single person in the public service has ever been prosecuted and funds and monies recovered from them where they have deliberately flouted Treasury regulations and proper processes in the public service. And that is totally unacceptable. We cannot allow that sort of conduct to just persist. People often, at the very moment that they are supposed to be their processes need to start, disciplinary processes, they often say, let me resign and flee. And then nothing happens. Matters are closed. We can't have that. So can we please have full of that? Secondly, I just wanted to come back to the Auditor General. I heard what the Honourable Schneeman has said, and I must say I share his concerns. Chair, I do believe that if we look at what the Auditor General has found in terms of leadership instability, we must make sure that the same is not said in the next year, at the end of next year. And the reason that I'm specifically saying that is that at present there are still people, I believe the latest one, do we have our, let me just check the titles of the positions. Do we have the Executive Manager Corporate Services here today? I believe that she is under suspension or she's been dismissed. Is that in recent weeks? What is the position with her, or is she simply just not attending today?
Honourable Killen, Honourable Rutua.
I just wanted clarity because I wanted to just ask that we trust that there's not a new spate of further disciplinaries that will again destabilise. And then lastly, my questions about the contract awarded and the rollout of access sites has now been parked with the minister about the Kubota investigation. But the report refers to several forensic investigations, etc. Are those different investigations? Also, as far as this is concerned, can't we just have some information so far whether USASA is satisfied with the rollout by the service provider? And if possible, if you could explain why it seems to be of the 33 sites, 23 were in KZN, 2 were in Northwest, and 8 in Mpumalanga, and why were other provinces overseas? If we could just have an understanding. I know Honourable Soma will be happy about KZN, but some of the other, and the chairperson will be happy with Mpumalanga, but there are people who will be concerned about the rollout. How did it come that certain provinces were identified and others were just completely overseen? If you work according to identification of the relevant areas in terms of set criteria, then certainly you should also select the entire country. I think the Northern Cape is also a very serious problem in terms of lack of connectivity. Thank you, Chair.
You're waiting for me. Honorable Ruto.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the responses that were given by USASA. I just wanted to be sure that in the event that USASA does monitor internet usage in the telecentres, does USASA still pay CEDTEC for interconnection? Although most telecentres do not have internet connection, this question derives from the notion that the general practice by the agencies that it does not ensure adequate oversight. I just want to know. And the other question is the committee was concerned by largely relating to the duplication of core mandate of USASA. With other departments such as the National Department of Rural Development and Land Reform and the NYD, can maybe USASA tell us how do they deal with this issue? This also relates to the fact that from the Auditor General's report, there is a concern that for the past 3 years, in the non-adherence of certain NAP elements of Electronic Communications Act by USASA, I'm referring to Section 82.4B, which talks also about the mandate of USASA. Now, can we be given clarity on the two questions that I've asked?
Thank you. Chairman.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just quickly deal with three matters and then give management to deal with the others. I think a very important question was asked about the capping of board remuneration right at the beginning. And my response to that would be most of the expenses were incurred earlier when we arrived at this board, because quite obviously we had more meetings. Others were arising from learning, others were arising from dealing with the matters. At the moment, Zane can confirm or disagree with me. Quite obviously, like any other funding, there is a quarterly budget. So that is a cap. You know, there are meetings that are set. There could be workshops here and there, but there is monitoring on how the funds could be utilized. And like I said, the most of the spending would have been at the time when we arrived, because, for instance, instead of having one meeting per quarter, you'd find that there would be this meeting, this workshop, induction. So there's quite a lot of funds that were used at that time. Yes, there is capping. The representative from DOC would also recall a discussion that we had with the minister, the erstwhile Minister Pule, in terms of how we apply the board funds, to say in instances where, for instance, I would be asked, I'm just making an example, I haven't done that, if I were to be asked to give an opinion about a matter, I wish I could, the advice was, why not get a specialist to do that outside the board, so that you're not seen to be using the money of the board to give each other money. So there was an engagement on this particular matter, but we're at a stage where we work on target is the wrong word, but budget and limits there too. That also helps, because it says you should be able to achieve what you want to achieve within a certain budget and a certain time. Don't think you'll always be coming here to meetings for the sake of meetings and that type of thing. The other question that I would like to respond to is a request that we provide a list to the committee of previous investigations, people on suspension, what happened. As we say, yes, we will provide that within the next week. Hasten to say we do not have most of the people who had criminal charges laid against them during our watch have left without any handshake. They are dealing with the police now, not with us anymore. But we will provide the requested list to the portfolio committee through the channel. I would take advice here, even from my own colleagues, board members, even to provide, if necessary, a list of any action that is being currently done. You remember I mentioned that the BDS executive is on suspension currently. We could also perhaps provide, but I would need to be advised there. There was a point raised in terms of, once again, the Kobodo report, things that are linking to the Kobodo report. I'm weary to begin to respond to issues that the minister may want to be raising or what the minister may want to be responding on, because at this stage it would be a matter of opinion, and I don't think the committee would like to get personal opinions from us. So if we could be patient and get the minister to reach that stage when the whole thing is concluded and the findings are put on the table for discussion by the committee. Let me also hasten to add on to say it is that Kobodo investigation that is currently on the table. We do not have any. The others were closed and completed and action is being taken. That is the only one that is being dealt with at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll take some of the questions that the Chair didn't respond to. I will go to the closing down of the two Swan centres, the discussion that ensued between us and GCIS. Chair, after the meeting that we had where we were informed by your good selves what the intention of GCIS was, there were subsequent meetings with GCIS, directly by myself, where they explained their reasons for wanting to pull out of managing the two Swan centres. It is not a question of closing the two Swan centres per se, but it was a question within the government's fears or government house was a way of finding a suitable home. There were discussions, there are discussions that are taking place with local government where they are saying local government should take over the two Swan centres and manage the two Swan centres because two Swan centres are giving services closer to where people are. We did get the list of all the two Swan centres that they have, and we've highlighted all the two Swan centres, all the centres where we've got access centre, and we are servicing those access centres. So at this point in time, the only problem is when are our leaders going to agree on who is going to look after the two Swan centres? But the indication is that local government is going to take that over in future. In terms of the rehabilitation of centres, Makoto spoke about the rehabilitation of centres earlier on. It's a project that we called the Handover Project. It's a project where we went back to all the centres that were there, some of them that were managed by other people, just to go and rehabilitate those particular projects. And we're using Centec to make sure that there is connectivity. We did have challenges with Centec, but we were able to sit down with Centec and resolve most of the problems that we have. Part of what we're going to be asking the board going forward is for the board to make an allocation or assist us to get a system or some form of a system that is going to assist us to track connectivity at the comfort of our offices, meaning have a dashboard of all our access centers and be able to get at any given point which of the access centers is not connected, and we are then able to react to that. But we also have engaged Vodacom, MTN, and Cell C to say to them, give us information on what are in these different centers that you are connecting, what are people using internet for, because it will help us to see information in terms of what internet is being used for, and also indicate to us whether our access centers are continually connected or not. But we do from time to time, as I indicated with our verification process, we do randomly sit in the boardroom and then decide to call 20 of our access centers and verify with them whether they are connected. And as at last week, Tuesday, all the sites that we made contact with, they were connected. Chair, there was also a question around the us having MOUs with some of the government entities that we're doing business with. There is a contract between USASA and Centec. There is an MOU that is in the process of being reviewed that will be concluded at any time from now onwards going forward. Let me also indicate that through the advice of this committee, we together with ICASA went out and signed a memorandum of understanding that allows us to share offices. We are currently occupying the offices in PE, and we have currently signed an MOU that allows them also to share our offices with them in Nelspruit. This was by no means an influence of the chair, but the office is there, there was big space, we could accommodate
them. Don't worry, in Mpumalanga.
And we have agreed that they can occupy. So there is an MOU that has been signed in that respect. I do know that the chair has spoken to a lot of chairpersons of other entities within the TOC family to sign the memorandum of understanding with them. I indicated earlier on, chair, that with regard to the rolling out of TTT, the MOU between us and post office is about 99% complete. We should be signing the MOU anytime from now going forward. A bid, in terms of the permanency of the bid adjudication committee, check the structure and the management of procurement is highly legislated and regulated. PFMA is very clear that there has to be a three-tier system. You would have your bid specification committee, which cannot be permanent by its nature. It will always have a person that has initiated the request as a member of the bid specification. The intention is for them to develop a specification and evaluation criteria. In that particular community, supply chain plays a very key role because they oversee the performance of that particular community. You also have what we call your bid evaluation committee, which is also not permanent. It comprises of different people across functionalities. It is also not permanent. However, the bid adjudication committee, as stipulated by the PFMA, it is recommended that it gets chaired by the CFO, and that's what is happening. And it is recommended by PFMA that it becomes a function of EXCO. So it is a function of executive members without the chief executive. So that is the only one that is permanent, but the rest of them are not permanent. We accept the comment that I made about the additional information that could be provided on the annual report. Part of us coming here is for us to come and learn on some of the things that we could include on the annual report so that they make the members' life much more easy, and we'll certainly make sure that we proceed and make sure that we give as much information as we can going forward. Chairperson, there is also a question around the position of the executive manager, corporate services. Yes, there are issues. There are disciplinary processes that are taking place. The outcome of the disciplinary has not been finalized as yet, but there is a process like that going forward. The chair has spoken about the investigations in USASA. And there's a question, chair, that is coming out and that keeps coming out, that seeks to give wrong information about the locality of the centers that we have. I would draw your attention to page 17 of the presentation that we did earlier on. Page 17, it talks about rapid deployment of cyber labs, and it's talking about phase one and phase two. You'd see, Chair, on phase one, that in KZN, under the community and Tucson centers, there were 21 that were done in KZN. And there were equally 21 that were done in Mpumalanga, 6 done in Eastern Cape and 1 in Northwest. I also draw your attention, Chair, to phase two that talks about the same issue. Eastern Cape, 43. Free State, 15. Limpopo, 2. Northwest, 1. and North, I mean Northwest One, you'd realize, Chair, that the bulk of those things are not in KZN, but they are in Eastern Cape, they're in Free State, and they are in Limpopo.
They are not in Mpumalanga either.
So the focus is not that we are focusing on KZN for any particular reason. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Moruto had a question in respect of Section 82, i.e. the adoption of the entire mandate of USASA. It has not been happening. That's the truth of the matter. What we're trying to do with the national, or what we are doing with the national strategy, is adopting the entire mandate in totality. I'm sure it is for that precise reason that other departments have started to move and do their own thing, because we were not taking on our mandate as we should have been. But we are addressing that, and when we take you, honourable members, through the detail of the strategy, you will see that we deal with aspects of awareness, we deal with aspects of training, we deal with aspects of content, as well as personnel, all of which are mandates of USASA. So we're addressing it now. You also had a question around whether USASA is still paying CENTEC for non-connectivity. That was the historical matter. We're not. The agreement we now have with CENTEC, or let me backtrack. The agreement that was in place was an incorrect agreement that stipulated connectivity to a point, to the building. It was not stipulating the extraction of that connectivity into the building, and that is where the technicality was lying. So we've taken responsibility for that error, and we have revised our agreement with CENTEC to reflect connectivity all the way through. So that will not be happening in future. And the spot checks that the CEO has mentioned is an effort to ensure that we do not have a repeat of that again. I think that's all the questions.
No. Thanks very much. Any of your questions not responded to, members? You've got 5 minutes. None. Okay. If that is the case, that's good. We are making progress. Chairperson and your board members, CEO, executive members, and everyone. I think probably there are a few things which members have raised that need follow-up, which you said you'll be able to do. One of them is the issue of the people which you're talking about. You don't need to give details in terms of actual details, just the issue of how many the names, and if they are with police, what are they charged with, by the police, not by yourself. And so on, because the cases I assume are still ongoing. You don't have to encroach to that processes and so on, because you are not investigators yourself, law enforcers, but just to give that information, just that indication. But I've realized that some of the cases we are talking about, if you talk about the former CEO, it was reported by this committee and debated by this committee in the previous board, and the matter was finalized at that particular point and so on. If you are talking about the previous CEO, Mr. Phineas, that one we dealt with at one point, but probably there's no harm to give the information and so on. There was the other issue which was raised by members also. I think on the Govoto report, probably you are correct if that report, that investigation was instituted by the minister. You can report on behalf of the minister's report, in particular if it's also investigate yourselves or the board. So you'll expect that is the minister who can talk about, not yourselves. It will be very difficult that you can talk about the report which is aimed at you. Probably members must just probably engage the minister at a point probably when it's completed. It does not seem to have been completed. It's still in a process. So probably when it's completed, then the minister will be appropriate person to be engaged in terms of the report and so on. I think that's the issue around the. That's where Team Tech comes in. Or I thought you were talking about Mr. Lumkom Team Tech at one point. Okay. But if that is the case, I think we are correct, Chair, that is the matter that the minister must address because it's his report, not the investigation, not yourself. But on your page 20, Chair, you are dealing with one major issue there, which is government priority. Page 20 of your presentation, slide 20. We are dealing with the matter of government priority of employment opportunities. The only snag is that you are not elaborating in terms of what does it mean. Appreciate the percentage, but what does that mean exactly? If you say 32% of what, what does it mean in terms of numbers? How many jobs were created? What does that 32% mean in numbers? Akiru a politician, when we go and talk, when you say percent, you are not sure which percent from which province, from where, and so on, which area, and all those other things. So it will be much appreciated probably if you can just unpack that slide 20 so that it makes sense from members in terms of where does that come from and the other things and so on. And appreciate steady. You see, you'll say 32% and we are talking about two people. But of course they meant 32% maybe of four people or five or something. So we don't know the number of the percentage where exactly. So if you can just unpack that, I think it will help us and so on. But the other thing which we are correct with, probably which we need to address, is your the treasurer's template which you are using to compile your report vis-a-vis the report which we'll appreciate here. Always there's a conflict between the two. And it's a long-standing issue. It's not a new issue around treasurer, what the treasurer wants, and what finally, when you come and report to us, we appreciate. There's always that difference between the two. Probably the route, maybe, is to go the route of trying to having those two different reports. So that when you talk to us, you are able to elaborate in terms of what will suit us, but complying with a treasurer's template and other things and so on. It's normally an additional work, but it can only make sense to us politicians if it comes the other way, which is clearer, and be able to track those things and so on. So, but I think that probably when you report as time goes on or next time, you'll be able to do that around those particular matters. I'll assume, Chair, that some of your replacement in terms of your centers and so on, that will mean also the areas where the committee did the oversight, because they are... One of your centers, many of them, which when that can tell you what we are talking about the point into the wall. We find that in Northwest, in one area in Northwest, where the center connected to the wall, and then there was nothing but charging USASA. But there was no one was utilizing that connectivity, but you were charged by center, but there was no one who was actually benefiting about that connectivity and the other things and so on. But probably it will help, Chair, if maybe you can go back to our reports and look in terms of those centers which we visited, were supposed to be attended to, and just check whether they are part of these centers which are here. The bad thing about that is that we went there as a committee. If some of them are not attended to, government becomes a liar. That's where the difficulty is. So just to check, I assume, but most of them, they might be covered in terms of what you done. Just check whether they are, some of them didn't fall through the cracks. There is one around Mbuzini, you know, the one with the limited access in terms of internet connectivity, which members went to Mbangwane or something like that. Those who were there, they will remember that center and other things. But otherwise, Chair, I think everything is okay. Members are happy you have responded to their questions. They are not happy, they are satisfied with your responses on the question which they have asked. I'm looking at the time before I'm called into order by Honorable Murutwa. I must conclude. But thanks very much for your presentation and your report. Look, it depends from which angle we are looking at. We know the history of USASA. We know where USASA is coming from. Some of the members, they can tell you with their eyes closed about USASA and so on. We are not naive, some of us. We understand that it will take time to bring it back to a normality where it's supposed to be. It will take time, a lot of work to do that and so on. So probably when at one point you got an opportunity to present your national strategy for access, which you are talking about, you'll be able to indeed to take over the other functions from the other department and back into you and so on. But otherwise, Chair, thanks very much. I was concerned why you are not making submission to the ECA amendment, because we are amending the legislation which impact heavily and universal service and access, and we didn't have you making presentation. But I was relieved when you were saying you are participating on the ICT policy review, which we hope that probably what we have not gave us, also amending the law. And if you check some of the submission and the amendments are impacting heavily, I hope that you have agreed or have some discussion with DOC one way or another on those amendments. Because it will be a futile exercise that we amend, but those amendments does not cure your defects or the issues which are day-to-day challenge to you. It will be much better that when we amend the amendment we are doing, are also helping you to be able to do your work more easier and be able to deliver and so on. Probably might have some time and engage with DOC and look in terms of those amendments. If there were no processes of processing them and so on. Just have a glance and look in terms of what do they mean to yourself, because they seem to have some implication to your operation and the other things. Whether for better or not, I can't tell. You are the operators on day-to-day around those particular matters. Otherwise, thanks very much, and thanks, members. We are done. Thank you.
And it can't